This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the 15th episode of Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars retrospective podcast series. I am JT. With me, as always, is a chap called Chad. Chad, how are you?
Doing good. How are you tonight?
Not too bad. I've been listening to some Where the Big Boys Play from the Vault.
Way back when.
Yeah, it's funny hearing, like, it's before, you guys obviously have never really talked too much, so it's like hearing your thoughts for the first time in audio form, and then also hearing Parr before he went through the Titans footage is very funny. Like, you're explaining to him, like, Bob Backlund stuff, and he's like, oh, really? You know, it's like so weird because he becomes so synonymous with that era, but it's such a dark spot for him on these early ones. So that's been a highlight, as well as your pronouncing of Don Kernodle is awful. So I've enjoyed that.
Kernodle.
We've been running those on the PTBN wrestling feed, the same feed to listen to this. So you haven't checked them out and you never listened. It's fun. I've never really went and listened to those older ones, I think, before I jumped in. So I'm making it a priority to finally hear them all.
Yeah, I don't think I've braved re-listening to one yet. I did listen to like the first 5 minutes of Starcade and was horrified. So
you were crying so almost as much as me in PTB 1, so I don't feel as bad.
I remember, it's funny how you remember that, but I remember I taped that like in my old house at the kitchen table. Which is kind of amazing now, like on like a, you know, like a Sunday morning at like 11 o'clock,
right.
Which would be like a disaster if I tried to tape that right now, like out in the open at the kitchen table on 11 o'clock on a Sunday. There, you'd hear all sorts of kids, dogs, everything else.
Yeah, it's funny how things change. Like
things
Scott and I today were just talking about today's the anniversary of Superstorm Sandy. 6 years ago, and we were reminiscing how we recorded with Kevin Kelly that night, and again, just so different. Like, my daughter was obviously born, but she was only, you know, whatever, 7 months or so. So
yeah,
it was crazy to think just how different things were. And even as I'm listening to Where the Big Boys Play, I was thinking back to the first show we did with you when Scott and I came on. What do we do? Bash 88?
Starcade 88.
Starcade 88.
Yep.
And I had to drop off halfway through because my daughter was freaking out. I had to go drive her around while Scott finished the show. The whole thing was just a mess, but it was the same thing. I think it was just like a Saturday morning or something. We were down here.
Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure it was a Saturday or Sunday morning. Yeah.
But anyway, it's been a fun trip through time. So if you haven't listened to those, check them out for sure.
What would you say, October or December? What would you say is your busiest month of just doing stuff?
I think it's October. It's become October. I feel like we have stuff just – there's a lot of birthdays. You got Columbus Day stuff. Football's going on.
A parade.
Yes, of course. The Columbus Day parade. Football's going on.
Can't miss it, I've heard.
Prepping for Halloween. Although we have had some slower weekends. Like, we've been – we have some friends that have an open house every Sunday for football that we've just started going to because they're also Jets fans. So it's like I never really had a Jets fan to watch the games with. So to go there to watch the Jets on the ticket and they just make a ton of food with a different theme every Sunday and the kids play, like their kids' age are like ours and like they have a bunch of people. It's become a blast. Like I just want to go there every Sunday now. It's like it helps me because if I'm sitting here, I get to do other shit. But there, it's like the kids are playing, my wife's talking to the other girls. So it's like – It's perfect. I gotta sit and watch football and eat. So it was quite the time. But anyway, we've been doing that the past few Sundays. But yeah.
Do y'all have the pumpkin patch, apple farm, that type of junk up there, or no? Not as much.
It's a whole fucking industry up here. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because those are relentless. I've been to. I've got like pumpkins coming out of my ears this year. We've got like 7 or 8 pumpkins.
We actually never did. We didn't go this year. Last year we did it a couple times, but this year we were going to do it over Columbus Day, and then we didn't. I didn't miss it too much.
We've done two pumpkin patches, 2 fall festivals, some other stuff, and a partridge in a pear tree. So
your regular fucking Charlie Brown.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
But this is my favorite time of year. Like mid September through Thanksgiving is like my favorite. Oh, even through Christmas. I mean,
Because it was so hot. Like, it was nice. It just got cold around Columbus Day around here. I'd say, like, the beginning, because I associate it with sports, too. So, October is usually my favorite sports month. I'd run it through Christmas. And then January is absolutely the worst month of the entire year. So, there you go.
Yeah. For me, it was always February. Because January, you at least have, like, New Year's, and you get Martin Luther King a couple weeks later. You get, like, the football playoffs. February is always pretty blah, but now it's my daughter's birthday's in there. And then the more and more I've gotten in with, like, PC and going to the games, like, that time actually goes by a little bit quicker than it used to for me because there's so many games in there that I'm going to and stuff. So that's helped a lot with that winter stretch, for sure. But anyway, speaking of throwing back the clock, I went to a house show, Chad, last Sunday.
That's right.
It was an interesting time. I haven't been to a house show in a long time. It was fun, though. It was such a laid-back atmosphere, and the crowd was, like, it wasn't that bit packed. I think we talked about this a bit on Place to Be, but it wasn't that packed, but it was, like, they were all into it, and there was no snarkiness or anything. So it was kind of, like, refreshing to not have to worry about the bullshit, and just, like, the people in front of us are super into it. Their kids were, like, really, really into the show, and it was infectious. It was a good time. It was nice and relaxed. Like, you're not on angst because of booking or any of that crap. So you're just sitting there and just watching them go at it, and it was a good time. I enjoyed myself.
That was at the Garden?
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be TLC. That's why we got the tickets.
Oh, yeah, that's right. When
they ended up doing Evolution and Crown Jewel and everything else, they ended up killing TLC and moving it to December. So they switched to the house show, which I guess it probably happened because D'Amato got the tickets. They're like, oh, I got them cheap. And then we realized why, like, an hour later. So, like, I swear they just switched it, like, right when they went on sale or something.
When he went it, yeah. Okay.
It was kind of shasty, but it was a good time regardless. We had fun. And then I went to Yacht Rock Review on Thursday. So it was a busy
week. Unfortunately saw that as well.
It was a great show. Those guys fucking rock out, man. I had a blast. I recommend it.
Never gonna get that.
Yeah, well, you're too young, I guess, for that era.
Yeah.
Which is weird because you're kind of lame. So I thought you'd be into it.
No, not me.
Okay. Anyway, it's if you're into any of it, or even just to go out, like beyond it, like they really, like, I don't know how.
So
but...
do they do covers or what?
Yeah,
what
they do covers
the there. Okay.
Yeah, they do covers, and they're all dressed up. They're in character. But it's like they're a really good band. Like they sound. Like the lead singer, actually, they're really diverse. Like they all sang, they all played different instruments, and like fucking Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins. Like, I mean, they had it down. Like they sounded just like them. Like they did Footloose as like the big last song before the encore, and that was really good. It was a lot of fun. The crowd was into it there as well. And then it was going to be a real busy week. I was supposed to go to an indie show on Friday as well.
Right.
To see my buddy John Walters come out of retirement to challenge for the Chaotic title. But and it hurt my back, so I was laid up and could not go. So I was sad. But I guess it seems like he's coming back for a while because I saw him post today on Facebook that he's going to wrestle in Alaska on some tour in April with Mick Foley. And
oh, that's weird. Yeah.
So
don't exactly hear much about the Alaskan indie scene.
No, someone should go open the territory there.
Well, Hawaii too. Like Hawaii's weird because there's that Ric Flair, Kid Von Erich. Match from Hawaii and obviously like with the Anai family or whatever, but you never hear nothing down there. So
the Kernodal family.
The Kernodal. Kernodal? Is it Kernodal or Kernodal?
It's definitely Kernodal.
Okay.
It's not Kernodal and it's not Kernodal. Anyway, anything else you want to cover?
It's one of those names. Also can't say lawyer.
No, you cannot. We've
Jerry the King Lawler.
We've proven that on
yes
the show. And then you also said it on one of those where the big boys planet and made me laugh because you struggled with it on the last episode.
Yes,
of this, so.
Yes, that's always a tough one for me. But
you're gonna say Will's. You're gonna say Will's boo, and then we'll know who it is.
His bae. No, let's dig into this one. This one that I was looking forward to. I hadn't seen this show in a while.
Yeah. No. Well, me neither. But probably more recently than you, since Scott and I had reviewed it not too long ago, but it's still been a bit. And that is Survivor Series 95. We talked about the go home on our last episode, and then we have World War III knocking on the door as well. So big few weeks here on the War Zone. And yeah, we can go ahead and dive right in. So we're coming live from Washington, D.C. Thankfully, well, no longer in Brandon, Manitoba.
Well, sort of Washington, D.C., right? Like, Landover. How far is this Landover?
Yeah, it's right outside, I guess. It's
okay.
But, I mean, that's the only arena in – I mean, there's no arena in.
Yeah, they didn't have the MCI here.
No, but even that's in Landover, isn't it?
I thought that was, like, downtown.
All right, let's see. Well, I mean, Landover is literally, like, on the cusp of D.C. I mean, that's where the Redskins play. Why am I drawing a blank? What's the name of the arena again?
Well, right now it's the Capital One Arena, and okay. It says it's in Washington, D.C.
All right, so maybe it is downtown.
I guess it's downtown proper.
It must be near, maybe it's near where the Nats play then.
Maybe. I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I've only been to Washington once, and I was 12, so.
Okay. All right, so yeah, so we're close to Washington, D.C., and of course we've talked a lot about that with the Bill Clinton impersonator and everything else going on.
And this was the first pay-per-view for them too, which is just kind of interesting, you know, like a big hub like that they hadn't had a pay-per-view till Survivor Series 95.
It's crazy because they did so many house shows. I mean, that was a regular house show loop for them.
Yeah, that was like one of the big ones. Yeah, I mean, it's just weird to think like at this point Ridgefield, Ohio had what, two pay-per-views, Albany, New York, you know, like Providence even before,
right?
Washington, they were really more established in the Northeast and kind of their Midwest strongholds than you think. But yeah, so
you think of some of those in your house arenas, like, you know, Winnipeg, Syracuse, like all those places had one before DC.
Yeah, it was Saginaw or whatever. Yeah,
that's right.
So we get a surprise right at the beginning with our announced team, which is going to be Jim Ross, Vince, of course, Vinnie Mac, and then Mr. Perfect. Comes out to do some announcing. Now that was not pre-announced, right?
This no
was a surprise. Yeah,
it was a surprise, and you figured, you know, whenever like the main color guy is in a match, you know, you kind of expect it. Like Rumble 94, DiBiase comes out as a surprise because Lawler was gone, and they didn't really have another heel guy. And then Survivor Series 94 is similar, and you expect maybe something there, but we end up getting just Gorilla and Vince. So here you're thinking, all right, Lawler's fighting, you know. Who else is really there? Maybe Doc, I guess, has done some stuff.
Yeah.
So you're probably thinking him. And then, yeah, they bring Perfect back, which is a really cool moment. The crowd's into it. And they do it before the video, which was neat. I like how they have him come out and then they cut to the opening. Like it's almost
that's
cold
like
open.
The very first thing we see is him coming out, his music or whatever.
And a couple of the notes I just want to mention. So this is the first Survivor Series on a Sunday. The first one not on Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving Eve. I remember, too, because I had like some – I was making my confirmation the next spring, and I had like some class at like some church. I just remember for some reason, like just wanted it to be over so bad so I could get home to watch the show. And I just remember waiting till I get picked up, and I, whatever reason, it's like a vivid memory of mine that it was the same day as the show. I had this class. So that always stuck out to my mind. And then of course is also sponsored by Karate Fighters. We should mention because they've been hyping the fuck out of that.
The comes to a head. Milton Bradley Karate Fighters presents this. Yeah, I know I did not watch this live, so I don't know when I watched it, but it was certainly not live. What was I going? I guess that's about it. No Barry Dudinsky either on the show. We didn't get any Doc and no Dudinsky, right?
Right, yeah, they haven't really done merch too much on the pay-per-views, I don't think, right? I feel like we haven't.
I mean, In Your House 3, I don't remember any. I don't know. They might have done them little cutouts on In Your House 3. I can't remember.
Oh, maybe. I know King of the Ring, I know for sure Dudinsky was there. After that, I don't remember too much.
Okay. Well, so that kind of leads us right into our first match, which is a Survivor Series match. which is Marty Jannetty, Barry Horowitz, Hakushi, and Bob Holly versus Skip, Rad Radford, Tom Pritchard, and the 1-2-3 Kid, newly turned.
Quite the crew.
Yeah, this was kind of where you saw the depth of the roster when Rad Radford started prancing out. And, I mean, Dr. Tom, we hadn't seen any of him.
Well, he's like a replacement. He is a.
So who is he replacing?
Our buddy Jean-Pierre Lafitte, who had now left.
So, sad.
Yeah, he was supposed to be in this. Well, actually, you know what? Hang on. Let me. Let me look quick. Because now I'm thinking of it. Kid takes someone's spot too, and that might be Lafitte because they say it. They say like. I'll look it up quick, but they say that Kid, like DiBiase, bought the spot from someone, and I think that might have been the feat. They say, because remember, Kid turned the week before, it wasn't supposed to be
in the match. Yeah, it was to go home, so, okay.
Yeah, I'll look that up quick, but...
Well, I mean, like I said, this really sort of showed the roster depth we were dealing with, because I mean, really, I wouldn't say there was any feuds brewing hotly between these eight at this point in time, was there? I mean, like, Horowitz and Hakushi was still... Mm-hmm. Kind of running around with Skip, but besides that, like, kind of what was going on.
And then just Jannetty and Kid, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so this says Kid is subbing for Lafitte, this is according to Graham. Bob Holly subbing for Avatar, so he's already done. so he wasn't supposed to be in here. But, yeah, I guess I guess Pritchard was supposed to be in originally then. Mm. I don't know if he was a replacement, like, originally for someone or what, but.
Okay.
Anyway.
So I've never reviewed a Survivor Series show before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of weird, like, with our style, because, you know, there's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of just going to read off my notes and we'll see. Okay. We may call an audible if it's too long in the next match. But, you know, I kind of wrote down just a few, I guess, high spots, you know, throughout the match.
That's fine.
So a Kid does the Wolfpack symbol on the way to the ring, which I enjoyed. And then Razor comes to ringside before the match starts. He wants a piece of the Kid, but he's restrained.
And I like that because we don't get that enough with these guys. Like, he really hates the Kid, so he wants to kill him.
Yeah.
So this is the first chance he gets. He's coming out to get him.
He was wanting a piece of him. You know, kind of wish you – it sort of makes me wish Kid would have been in the wild card match.
Yeah.
Like, if they could have found some type of spot for him, like somebody gets laid out. Or even just got rid of Dean Douglas and just said, oh, well, you know.
Well, they're right. They could have bought him off, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because DiBiase bought him off. Who cared about him anyway? They certainly didn't.
Right, because it's not like they're really keeping Kid and Ramon apart. I mean, they've been fighting on TV. And the next show, they're against each other, like, in a tag. So, I mean, it's not like they're, like, slow burning this where they're not touching for months. Or
right. Marty got the early advantage. I did like Vince bringing up the Kid and Jannetty were former tag team champions.
Yep.
I thought that was a good callback. Holly does a Rana that looks pretty clunky, perfect. And his first memorable commentary line for me where he said, that was a good wrestling move, but not quite perfect after that. It looked a little botched. The heels get the advantage when Rad Radford, of all people, spine busters Hakushi. Kid gets tagged in for the first time, has good heel heat. And then all of a sudden, like, this Landover crowd was somehow behind Barry Horowitz.
Oh,
there
was
quite a few Barry chants that broke out, which really made me sad because Barry has been annoying the piss out of me and didn't do much here to endear himself to me either. Holly gets the flying body press to eliminate Dr. Tom. After that, so, I mean, Pritchard didn't do much of anything in this match. I didn't have any notes from him. But then Bob Holly is immediately rolled up by Skip, so now we're down to 3-3. And then there was this weird spot where Skip did a Frankensteiner from the top rope, but then, like, feigns exhaustion, so he, like, just starts selling it.
That? Was he selling, like, that he hit his head, I think?
I don't know what was going on. It didn't work out. And then Perfect says DiBiase was going haywire at one point where he was like literally just like calmly standing next to his corner.
So, how like checked out was DiBiase at this point? He's just like so fucking done with this shit.
No. And Perfect was so like ramped up. He's like, oh, DiBiase is going haywire. He was just like staring into space.
Fucking half asleep. He's like, I am done with all this fucking garbage.
Oh man! So Kidd hits a back kick to the back of Kushi's head, and then Radford uses the tights to eliminate him. And then I thought the match bogged down pretty good with Radford having the advantage over Horowitz. Radford's pretty bad. He's pretty bad. Jannetty tries from the apron, trying to get the crowd behind Barry. Radford does some jumping jacks and then gets rolled up to eliminate him, thankfully. And now it's Horowitz and Skip. They face off, blind tag the Kid, and he pins Horowitz off the leg drop, which was, I thought, kind of a pretty weak finish for that.
Well, he is a jobber.
Just didn't feel like a good finisher. So now Marty has to go at it alone. They do cut to Razor in the back, and he is going haywire at all this going on. Jannetty gets a powerbomb to Skip from the top rope to eliminate him. That looked really good.
Yeah.
What a maneuver from Vince. And Kidd versus Jannetty, which is good. I mean, that should have been the final pairing, judging by the booking of this. And Kidd gets a top rope leg drop for a two count, some more back and forth. And then Sid comes out from ringside. Marty hits the rocker dropper, waste some time, and then Kid's able to get to the ropes. And then we get the kind of screwy finish where DiBiase distracts the ref. Sid drops Jannetty over the top rope, throat first, and then Kid gets the pin. I thought that was a pretty weak move by Sid to, like, pin Marty, who's gotten a pretty good push. I mean, the right person went over, but I kind of would have liked to see Kid be just a tad stronger, or if Sid was going to interfere, he'd have gave, you know, Marty the power bomb or something on the outside. It just seemed like a really weak move to finish. But overall, it was a pretty fun opener.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, it was long, but
decent
had a lot of good spots. And I thought Kidd looked good in the heel role. Marty's been solid. The crowd was behind Horowitz. Hikuchi had some good spots here and there. Really only Radford was the offensive part for me. I mean, because Dr. Tom wasn't in there, or really Bob Holly, long enough to make a difference.
Right.
So I went 3 stars on this bad boy.
Are you a Spicoli fan in any way?
No, I never really got him too much. He's kind of one of those people where, like, I mean, obviously he died before you really knew what he could do. But I felt like a lot of people were like, oh, he would have for sure been a breakout character and stuff like that. And I don't know. He just felt too lackey-ish to where I feel like he'd have had a shelf life no matter what he'd have done. Like, I just don't think you have too many people in wrestling history in that role that are like the ultimate lackeys that have been hanging around for that long.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't think you're far off. He, I'm not too up on his, like, ECW stuff. You know, maybe hopefully we'll be seeing it soon. But also, even as WCW, like, I'm really this dark on most of 98. Like, so when I was rewatching all that before we started this project, I'd gotten into, like, very early 98. I think I saw up right up around when he passed away. Yeah, and he was starting to catch on a little bit. But, he's almost a guy that maybe passing away probably helped his legacy in a way, like, you know, in a weird way, because he didn't get the chance to just linger around and didn't do nothing. So anyway, but yeah, no, this role is nothing for him. I mean, it's better than when he was a jobber in like 1990 or whatever. But
yeah, sure.
But no, it was a good opener on paper and in the ring. Jannetty positioned as the leader is cool, as we've talked about him kind of. He almost feels like a little bit above his team, which I think is good for him. When you picture this, like, if you had looked at this like 6 months ago, you probably think, all right, these guys are all kind of scrubs. But rewatching that play out, like, does it feel to you like Jannetty was about a cut above the rest of the guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think his push on Raw as, you know, kind of the gatekeeper for the heels they're really trying to push has raised him in my eyes, for sure.
So, and definitely Skip's last gasp, too. He's pretty much only afloat because of Sonny at this point. So, I mean, they need something. And they'll try. They try in 96 to figure out a way to rejuvenate him. But I like the spot. I like the idea of having Kidd buy the spot. And I like your idea of putting him in the wild card match. But my only fear is there. Like, I don't see him surviving with when you look at all the guys they have there. So, like, I thought this actually made him look. You kind of give him a strong win to open the show, even though he gets help, but he looks pretty good throughout the match. So this is almost like a better showcase for him, I think, than putting him in the wild card.
Yeah, I mean, I would also think if he was in the wild card, he probably would have to job. So, yeah, he does at least get put over pretty big here.
And he's going to need it because he's already up against an uphill battle against Ramon.
Yeah.
Random spot for Dr. Tom, like we said. You know, I thought it was good booking with Ramon trying to get in the ring. I like the hot start by Marty, even though his was awful. Fucking neon tights on. Holly hits a nice power bomb on Radford. I thought the kid on heat was really good. Do you think I feel like they should have changed his gear? Like, we talked about this. I've talked about it in the past, like with Tatanka. Anyway, I think we mentioned it maybe last week a bit, but I really think they could have changed up his look a little. Even if he just gets a more of a ponytail or cuts his hair, just something. It just looks silly that I'm still out there with the 1-2-3. And I know we talked about the $1 million kid idea, but it is like the more I see it, the more it like jumps out to me.
Yeah, I agree. He looked pretty goofy. Just sort of in the same get up coming out with DiBiase. And that was the only difference.
At least change the color like green for money or something. You know what I mean? Like you just saw the purple right. on. It just looked kind of weird. It's been a big 95 for Holly, by the way. This is his biggest pay-per-view year. He's been on like almost all the big ones. Yeah, and the crowd was into Barry, like you noted. Holly, when he eliminates Pritchard with the crossbody, like Pritchard just stood around like a dope, like walking in circles until he hit him. Not his best night for the old doctor, the good friend of PTBN. Skip sneaks in and eliminates Holly right after. We talked about that. I like the battle between Hakushi and Skip, and the crowd was really hyped as Hakushi just really mowed through Kid with a burst of offense as Razor watched. And then Rad pinning Hakushi was sad to see, even though Kid led to it. Hakushi's just one of the biggest. We talked about all the misses in 95. I think Hakushi's got to really be like a top two or three.
Yeah, he could have been a lot more than what we got. I mean, yeah, jobbing to Radford is about the bottom of the barrel. So I don't know why they decided to do that, to be honest.
And it's tough. It's like you can say, like, oh, he came early. But this was a, could have been maybe a good time for him. You know what I mean? Like it could have been a good time for him because it's like there wasn't much talent. So like you think he could have really stood out. But
sure.
Maybe later he would have been used better because guys like him just weren't used well at this point, I guess. I don't know.
I guess, but I mean you even see this with Tajiri and ECW. I don't know what it is. It's like I just don't think they because both Tajiri and Hakushi, even Tajiri, it's more egregious because he literally is probably the most over guy in late era ECW.
Right.
And Hakushi's not that, but yeah, I mean, as we talked about, like Hakushi is one of the few guys that he's probably not as good. Or, I mean, he's definitely not as good as like Eddie and Benoit at this point in time, but at least like he's not going to get smoked by them. Like if they were doing showcase matches as him and comparable talent, they could go head to head with what was on Nitro from an athletic standpoint, and they just choose not to, and to not even present him as any point of a threat, really. I mean, he's doing goofy segments with Barry backstage that are not humorous in the slightest, and then jobbing in ring to whomever.
No, he looks good until King of the Ring, and then that is downhill once he gets involved with the Skip shit and all that.
Right.
And Lawyer. You do wonder what alternate universe it could have been if Benoit had come in early 95 when it was rumored for him to maybe team up.
Right.
And maybe we get some stuff with him and Hakushi and other. You know what I mean? Like maybe it goes differently, but.
Yeah, that's an interesting what if.
He's definitely wasted. Yeah, so the Rad fucks around. He does the push ups, gets rolled up, so he's gone. I like Barry's good fire and offense, but then it's like almost tragic. Like this guy's finally gets another pay-per-view. He's shining, the crowds go nuts, and then Kid just pins. It's like tragic to see. Like, and then you get another great perfect line, which you didn't mention, which maybe his line of the night. He's such a douche when he says that'll break your neck when Jannetty does the rocker dropper. Of course, calling back to when he broke the jobber Chad Austin's neck with that move.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even catch that. Yeah. Hell yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's like he was waiting just to hit that line. Like he came in, he had it written down. Like, yeah, he's such a douche. He's like, that'll break your neck. He says it like almost immediately. He's like, you couldn't even wait to get it out. He's like, that'll break your neck.
Yeah, he's on quite a roll this whole show, as we'll talk about.
It's funny because Lawler's always looked at as like kind of the big heel douchey commentator, but I'll tell you, like, Perfect's a real dick in this run. He's like a real asshole. All right, so we get some back and forth. Skip and Marty, that was well done into the powerbomb finish. And I like the final two because, A, they're, you know, obviously Jannetty's friends with Ramon, and then you get the background of them being tag champs. But also, it's kind of a nifty callback to 93 when they were the final two in that Survivor Series match in the opener and they won. So it's like it's almost like a nice two-year bookend to their whole run, which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah. That's neat, I guess.
In the world of WWE context, it's pretty neat. And then Sid comes up and we get the finish, like we said. But yeah, real fun opener. I thought it was a great pace that never really slowed down. And I thought the stretch from when Rad goes out until the end was pretty good. And then you get Razor just destroying the locker room. So I went 3 stars on this one too, Chad. It was a fun opener. Especially when you look on paper. Like, there's some good stuff in there, but it really could have been bad if they went.
Yeah, it could have been bad. So, yeah, they did pretty good with what they had. Promo in the back with Camp Cornette and Dean Douglas. Kind of nothing much of a note here, but it plays into another promo we have later. Mm-hmm. And they're just sort of hyping the wild card match and them teaming with Razor, which, you know, they're setting the seeds that there's probably going to be some dissension amongst the ranks there.
Right, they're all shitting all over him. I mean, they're right, just taking right. shots at him, telling him to figure out his priorities. And despite his mental state, we're, you know, pretty much unified, so.
And that leads us right into our second match, which is a Japanese women's wrestling showcase besides Alundra Blaze. And it is Alundra Blaze, Kyoko Inoue, Saki Hasegawa, and Chaparita Asari versus Aja Kong, Bertha Faye, Lioness Asuka, and Tomoko Watanabe. So I'm sure you are very familiar with all of these ladies.
I've seen
their
this
careers.
Match before, yes.
Lioness starts off and gets beat up by Asari and Blaze and pinned off a Blaze German suplex in 2 minutes. And I will say that was shocking because just from, you know, a Japanese legacy standpoint, of these eight ladies, Aja Kong historically is the biggest figure. But Lioness Asuka is number two, and right. it's not even really close. Like, she was in the Crush Gals tag team, which was huge, even bigger than like the Jumping Bomb Angels in Japan. I mean, she may honestly be bigger than Aja Kong, because in the 80s, when she was the top tag team, it was a rocking and rolling. So to see her kind of be the first one to go, I thought was really surprising. Then Saki Hasegawa hits five double arm suplexes in a row, and that gets a good reaction from the crowd. And then Perfect had a line that said, "Whatever happened to All American Lady? She should be home making her old man something to eat."
Oh, he's, so, the worst. He's such a douche.
So that was bad. And then when Aja comes in, says, "Here comes the big one."
Yes. Christ. Oh, so good.
Oh my god.
They're so and poor JR is like, he's trying. He's trying out there in this one.
JR was actually really good in this match.
He's working hard.
Shockingly probably did his homework. I would assume he had help. Like, I don't know who would have spotted him for this match, but it'd be interesting to know like who in the back would have spotted him for that, but yeah, he did good. Surprise.
Gave Lee Marshall a call to catch up on women's wrestling.
Yeah.
Special analyst over in WCW.
They show the Spanish announce team, so that'll come into play later as well. Also, another line that I heard, they were like, they're saying you can have the one in white, I'll take the one in red. Or something. So it's just awful. Hasegawa gets eliminated with a Saito suplex from Aja Kong. And now, so Saki Hasegawa, she retired fairly quickly after this. And she's kind of an interesting case where she's one of the last few that retired when she hit that 25-year-old kind of age parameter. You know, they did away with that in the 80s officially, but she still retired when she hit 25, and she was a really good worker, so it's kind of sad that she's almost done right after this match. Asari goes against Kong. That's a great matchup for Kong because she can just kind of throw her around. Aja with a middle rope splash to take her out, and then Kyoko gets tagged in for the first time, and Aja squashes her almost immediately and pins her. And Kyoko Inoue, around this time, was also on one of her biggest runs of her career, like 95, 96, 97. That's in her wheelhouse as a single star.
So they got a lot of these girls in here like at a really key time. Like, right? I mean, it's not a bad gap for them. Like, I'm curious. Yes. Well, yeah, let's talk about the match, and then I want to talk about kind of the concept of bringing them in. Go ahead.
Right.
We'll
so now it's 3-1 against Alundra. Alundra hits a suplex where Watanabe did not kick out, but Mike Kyoto said she did. So a little bit of miscommunication there. And then Alundra adjusts what she was going to do with a powerbomb into a pile driver to get the pin on her. So they were not really on the same page. Bertha and Aja run into each other, and Blaze is able to hit the German to take out Bertha Faye. So now it's just Kong versus Blaze, and I thought the match picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Vince says Aja isn't the most handsome woman he's ever seen.
So, sucker, though.
So Kong heals it up a bit for the crowd. That gets a good reaction. And then ends up winning with one of her nasty spinning back fists.
Yeah, she collaborated.
So, yeah, absolutely a waste of lunger with that. So a dominating performance for Aja. Really feels like they had big plans for her coming up. And overall, with this match, I thought it was fun to see her showcased. It had some kind of moments of miscommunication, but was quick and was fun. So I ended up giving this one 3 stars as well.
Mm-hmm. It really was a good showcase for Aja. She really did dominate. And credit to Alundra. I mean, where she's at in her career and what she's doing in the WWF and what she's been doing, like, she did not have to go out there and get killed by these fucking girls, but she does. I mean, she goes out there and takes a beating, and that back fist, like, she got cracked with that fucking thing. I mean, she didn't have to go out there and do all that crap, but there she is. So good on her. And no, this is cool. Like, it's a good way because this division we've talked about it is so, it's just a, like, there's nothing there. It's just so empty. It's like literally just we talked about. It's like two women fighting, and rarely, you know, we see them every now and then. And also, we get the import of, you know, 6 other women that were great, and now here we are. I thought it was a cool way to make the division. Like, if you're just kind of tuning into this pay per view, maybe not watching week to week or something, or, you know, however you want to state it. Like, if you're just kind of putting this on, like, maybe you kind of get drawn in by what you're seeing. So I thought it was a kind of a shrewd move. JR just. He says the Blaze Kong feud is raging, which is, I don't know where where it's raging, but apparently it's going on. I mean, was she in Japan doing this, like, feud with Aja?
No. I mean, Aja for 1995 was hurt a lot. So, yeah, I mean, they didn't exactly have a feud brewing.
Right. So, the All Japan women, though, like, they waste no time going into a press of the crowd, their spots. Like, they just, I mean, Asari breaks out the Sky Twister press, like, immediately.
Not even yeah, finish, right.
Just right out of the gate. And Blaze, like we said, really pushes herself to keep up. She gets the eliminate on Asuka and then takes to the air. She goes to the floor. That's where Perfect gets sexist, says they should be home making food. Vince gets the big one to comment. Aja just hits a nasty German, just folding up necks and crushing bones with splashes. I mean, she's just fucking destroying everyone. She's clearly the one being chosen and set up here. We get a fucked up blown 3 count on Inoue, but whatever, they don't even try and like reverse it. They just say she's out, and then Alundra's left 3-on-1. She gets one pin, has to deal with the two monsters, and then you get a JR line. His Bertha has been hitting the buffets lately, a few buffets lately. Alundra goes over Bertha with the bridge in German. I thought that looked cool, like nice throw of strength. And then JR really goes into the history between Aja and Blaze. So I guess there was some, because, I mean, he goes into it a bit.
Yeah, just check Cage Match. Their only other interaction, according to Cage Match, was in 1990 in a couple of multi-man matches.
Okay.
So yeah. Not much.
But he's really on point in this match. He worked hard in this one. Like, he earned his pay on this night.
Yeah, he did good.
Even give the correct answer the last time the women were Survivor Series, which is a JR thing that's not always done right, where he says, like, you know, the last time these guys fought, like, he botches years a lot later and
right.
Later on. But he nails it. The last time we saw the women was 87. And again, a lot of hot pace, no slow moments. Aja just mows through Blaze at the end for a dominant win. Really great putting the focus on Kong as a beast and top contender. We even get the Orient Express music for the win, so that was good. And Aja was set to face Blaze at Royal Rumble 96. That, if you look in the magazine from that time, that was definitely scheduled. And because if you remember, like, they would put those previews out in the magazines pretty far ahead. So I think it timed out where they did that, and then she threw the title in the trash on Nitro, so that obviously killed that. But it seems like they were setting up for Kong Blaze to be the next kind of feud of the year, I'm guessing. It was just going to rotate the formula, right? 94, we had Bull. 95, we had Bertha. 96, going to be Aja, just the monster. I'm sure she was probably going to beat Blaze at the Rumble, is my guess, and then hold the title for a bit. But I'm curious if there's going to be more to that relationship. Have you seen anything around that?
With the All Japan women or just Alundra in general?
Yeah, if the All Japan women were going to hang around at all, like, or is it just going to be Asuka? I mean, she was definitely going to fight her at the Rumble, so whether she wins or not, she was going to be there. But
yeah,
I'm assuming she was going to win, so I don't know if they would keep bringing in these other girls to fight her.
I would guess they would probably do kind of what they did with Bull Nakano the year before, where, like, at the Rumble, they could have had Asuka win, and then they might have done a match in Japan because Alondra and Bull did have a match at the Big Egg Universe show in 1994 in November. So they could have done a little bit of a back
maybe
and forth
at Mania
there,
too.
Probably.
I mean, Mania is a kind of short card possible. They could have made throwing in there.
Yeah.
So the women that are in, and we'll talk about this in a couple of weeks in WCW. Now, where are they from? So these were from All Japan, right?
Yes, these were the All Japan ladies. The women we talk about from well, it's kind of interesting. So the women in World War III we'll get to is kind of a mixture also,
okay.
But have some JWP.
Okay,
is,
that's right. That's right.
But All Japan Women is still the biggest promotion in 95. So Aja Kong's 95 is kind of weird where she's injury riddled for a lot of it. But I believe, let me check if her or Toyota was the champion at this time because she held the championship. Their championship is really interesting. They have they call it the big white and the big red, their two belts. She held that belt, I know, for a long time. But I am checking. But anyway, so yeah, Aja Kong at the worst was one of the, you know, one of the top stars of the promotion. Kyoko Inoue, like I said, was having her big run. And so Aja Kong had just lost the belt to Dynamite Kanzai on August 30th, 1995. So, okay. And that ended a really classic feud between them. So, yeah, she was in there in the mix. Either her or Toyota was probably the two big stars. And the other women, like I said, Saki Hasegawa, she was always kind of presented as an upper mid carder. Lioness was weird because she was a legend in the 80s, and then she came back and didn't get much opportunity in All Japan Women, but also started her own promotion or worked a lot in JD Star. And then when the Crush Gals reunited in Gaia, she had a lot of high profile matches. So she still had some kind of legendary appearances left in the tank. Chaparita Asari has kind of, and her and Tomoko Watanabe, they sort of had sort of journeyman type careers. Nothing too special, but could be good with the right opponent. So that's your rundown there.
It's interesting to me, too, that DDF was actually, like, getting the better women, right? Not better, but the more high-profile from the bigger promotion.
Yeah, I mean, Chaparita Asari was somebody around this time who was very flashy. So,
right. And how about, Hokuto was pretty big, too, right? She's a big name.
Who?
Akita Hokuto in WCW.
Oh, well, that was, WCW. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that was really good for them.
But it's rare to me that DDF gets, like, the big, like, I feel like when, like, later when they do, the, like, the Mexican promotions, they get AAA, which is kind of the, not as good as, like, the guys that go to WCW. So it was impressive to me that they actually kind of went big, you know, and got, like, the big names.
Sure. They did good.
Yeah, no, they did well, and it's a nice showcase here. And, again, if it was setting up, you know, you wonder what could have been if they built a division around maybe like a working agreement with All Japan Women and had them come over for tapings once a month or once every other month or something. And if Alondra sticks around, like, you wonder what could have maybe been with that division, you know?
Yeah, I think it could have been pretty fun to see. So it's kind of a shame, but what can you do?
So Todd,
we'll get them tomorrow night at least.
That's right. That's true. So Todd's with Bill Clinton, who confuses Bam Bam Bigelow with Bam Bam Flintstone. But I did like the bit where the pyro goes off for Bigelow and the Secret Service jump on Clinton and Pettengill. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was probably the best we've seen. But yeah, like Clinton was like, oh yeah, I remember him and Pebbles. And yeah, that was pretty bad. But
that was a Lawler level joke. That was definitely rough, but I love the, like, all of a sudden, like, get him down! They'll jump on both of them.
Yeah, you see, like, three people rushing to the, even Todd was, like, going to throw himself on the president.
Right.
To protect
him. What a guy. They should have measured off Todd, that way he gets shot, but try to save the president.
So that leads us to our, what did Vince call this, a showcase match?
Or yeah,
he had some spot, like, yeah, weird like term. That. Yeah, spotlight match. It's Goldust versus Bam Bam Bigelow. This is Bam Bam's swan song, correct?
Yes, this is it for him. His final showing.
Period, right? Match. This is, he never wrestled for WWF again.
Nope, never again, which is crazy to think.
Yeah.
But no, he's done.
Just there we go.
Click and that was it. End of his run.
And what a match to go out on. Yeah. As,
it actually, I will say this. He's supposed to be in the 96 Rumble. He's announced for that. But he no-shows or he gets replaced. So this does end up being his final showing, but he is mentioned at least for that match.
There you go. I mean, this, I literally couldn't take hardly any notes on this match because it was all punching and kicking.
Yeah, it's tough.
Very lumbering action. I mean, Goldust, I thought, had some moments of some big power moves. But again, like we talked about, just like he's still lacking that kind of connective tissue to where after he would hit a big move, he would sort of do his pose and do his mannerisms, and all you talk about was how, you know, the announcers just talk about how creepy he is.
Right.
So it gets, you know, it's just like you can't really invest in the match because it doesn't really hold up in retrospect. Like them talking about how much of a freak and a weirdo Goldust is. And even in real time, you know, I mean, it's just not very inspiring overall. Bam Bam certainly didn't care. And Goldust ends up winning with the Bulldog after, well, this went, though, what, like 10 minutes, 11 minutes? And, like, there just wasn't much to it. I kind of gave it 2 stars as sort of like a mercy killing.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know if it deserved that. Just when it was done, I was like, okay, 2 stars.
But, yeah, it would have took over 8 minutes. The women went 10. The opener was 19, just under 19.
Yeah. So Goldust still, I think we can safely say, has not found his footing completely yet.
It feels like a step back. I mean, like the Marty match kind of stung, but he had that one decent one on Raw, right? Wasn't he? Like
yeah.
One.
Yeah, he had, well, like, yeah.
Who did he fight on Raw? Savio?
Done okay. I think it might have been Savio. I can look that up when you give your thoughts.
Yeah, I feel like he had that one where I was like, okay, like this wasn't bad, you know, coming off of. Because in your house, went 2 stars to Jannetty, you went 1.
Well, Savio, you went 2.25, I went 2. So this is right up there with his performance there. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, Bigelow's is really out here to put over Goldust. He's really tumbling down the ladder here in this battle for Asbury. He at least gets his pay-per-view showcase, so we'll give him that. Perfect. Goldust is a mystery as he comes down the aisle, and we get the inset promo from where he gives the movie quotes. As always, a really long Goldust entrance. I mean, just really drawn out, and the announcers just talk all about him as he's doing it. Tons of mind games. Vince says, we don't know if it's a charade or what's going on. JR has a good, very 1995 line. Goldust has been a hot topic on America Online as of late, so he's stalking the chat rooms, seeing what's going on. He pictures JR, like, just lurking in different Mark chat rooms,
yeah,
seeing what they're saying about Goldust. Trading nudes of Sonny. Bigelow gets very little offense. It's very short-lived. And Vince says Goldust is a great strategist, but maybe not a great wrestler. It's a great way to put him over, Vince. He's smart, but he's not the best.
Oh, no.
A lot of theatrics. JR says Goldust makes him uncomfortable, which, again, they're really starting to push more of that oddity part of him that we haven't really gotten to yet. This is kind of the early vestiges of it. Perfect mentions that Bigelow's never won WWF Gold, which is on point and also insightful for him. Something that he brought up. Lots of strikes, like you said, and the front face lock by Goldust. Bigelow gets a brief comeback, misses the headbutt. Goldust goes back. He's working the neck and head. JR says Bigelow's a step off. He can't get on track. I mean, they're pretty much burying Bigelow. He's getting no offense, and they're saying, like, he looks like shit tonight. He gets another glimmer, and then the Bulldog. I thought Bigelow looked like a bum and a jobber here. It was real sad. The year started so promising with him with the LT stuff. He's in the fucking main event of WrestleMania. Like, he's buddies with Diesel. He's on top of the card. And then, boom, as soon as King of the Ring hits, Shawn comes back. And Bigelow just runs afoul or whatever happened. He is as nothing from King of the Ring on. Which is funny because, like, again, he looked fine in all that stuff. I mean, he carried fucking Taylor. It's like a great WrestleMania main event, you know, for a celebrity match.
Right.
And now here he is just putting over this new guy and just looking terrible. Again, it was like worked okay and the finish was fine, but it was just boring. It was so fucking boring. And I would not Like, if you just watched this in a vacuum and you guessed 8 minutes, forget it. Like, I would have thought, like, 30. Like, that's what it felt
like.
Yeah,
yeah. It definitely felt like a, you know, 13 to 15 type right. minute affair. Because it's just, I mean, Goldust would hit a move and then he poses forever. And then he goes back and hits one more move and poses forever. And Bigelow had no fire, you know, wasn't even trying to create
he was so checked out.
From
I mean,
the crowd. So.
He just didn't give a shit. Like, he's so checked out. He's the worst than DiBiase as far as being checked out.
Them two should have had a match, loser leaves town, where both of them wanted to leave. So, see who can lose the best. So, that's it.
So, I went a star and star and 3/4 on that.
Bye bye, Bam Bam.
Sad.
For the new year.
Back to Asbury.
I'm looking forward to seeing when the Goldust stuff kicks up. Like, when I guess when he gets involved with Razor.
It's coming soon. It's. By In Your House, he's involved with Razor, so it's over these next few weeks.
Okay, that'll be good, because right now it's been a rocky start.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the presidential box. Mr.
But the
Bob
one thing
Backlund.
I will say about this with him is, like, there's enough intrigue that he's not like an Avatar and these other fucking guys where they kind of suck in their first couple and they're done. Like, he's got enough going on and enough, like, pedigree to him that you can tell, like, they're going to give him some shots. You know, because a lot of these other guys haven't gotten much of a chance. Like, they bomb out and they're done, you know. So it's,
right.
He's at least got enough, like, mystique going for him and, like, enough time and effort put in that they're going to make it try to work.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll go back to the box. Bob Backlund's in there. He tells Clinton, "When you address me, sir, it's Mr. Backlund to you." So I mean, nothing more, just sort of a quick segment to have Bob there.
I like it. Like, I mean, Backlund is completely no-sells him and shits on him. Like, just ignores him completely. And Clinton just yucks it off. So, and then Bill says he should run against him. Oh, he should run against him.
Maybe I'm Baron Dole.
Probably. Check the Rasmussen pulls and see who's ahead.
Wow, good callback. So now we get the Royals versus, did Undertaker's team, what was their name?
The Dark Side.
Oh, the Dark Side. So
or
here
the
we
Bone
go.
Street Crew, I guess, is pretty much what they are.
Yeah, I mean, Fatu's wearing his shirt for shit's sake, so obviously he's in the bag for the dead man. So this is obviously Taker's return from getting legitimately squashed by Mabel.
I think earlier. They all had the shirt on, didn't they? I'm pretty sure Godwin had it under the overalls, and I think Savio did too.
Know, he was wearing like a black shirt under the overalls. So
I think they all
possible.
Had the Taker shirt on, yeah.
Oh, there we go. Good solidarity there. Mabel's hair. What was going on there? That was quite the mohawk here.
Yeah, was course, it sticking up or was it down? I forget.
Yeah, this was when it was sticking up. Yeah, okay. It was in full erect mode. So
it wasn't lied, died, and laid to the side or whatever.
Yeah,
Jesse says
I
for
can't
Coco.
Remember if it was. I'm guessing this was a perfect line, but he said, "I thought he was so scared his hair was standing on end."
Yeah, it's ridiculous. That's so long. So. He's just trying to do whatever he can to stay relevant.
Yeah, yeah. So Taker kind of shows off his mask, and Mabel gets freaked out by that. I didn't quite understand that. So this match, we had a lot of back and forth early on. Is really for this one again, like, so Mabel versus Taker's obviously a feud, and Hunter and Henry Godwin. But besides that, the other people are just sort of there. You know, there's not a lot of heat between them. I thought Hunter wasn't scared of Godwin. And actually, you know, that's a feud I've liked better rewatching, but I thought they were kind of sluggish here. I'd like to see more fire between them just in their limited sequences with each other. Mabel gets tagged in, misses a charge. Taker's still hanging out in the corner. Mabel's able to hit Savio with a sidewalk slam, and then Vega gets worked over, and the King hits a good pile driver, but then wastes a lot of time and only gets a two count off that. Vega at one point hit an early version of the Rock Bottom or the Uranagi, which looked good. And Mr. Perfect is calling Hunter Triple H a few times throughout this match. So
yes.
He name drops that.
He's the one who definitely invented the nickname for sure.
Yes, yes. Lawler cuts off of Vega, his attempt to tag out. And then he tries another pile driver. And it was weird, like, I couldn't figure out, so did Vega, like, do some weird reversal, or Is it he's hard-headed, so he no-selled it? Like, because he just pops right back up.
Right.
And then tags out. So Taker gets tagged in for the first time in the match. The crowd goes nuts. King tries to tag out, but everyone on his team in the apron drops down, so he can't make the tag. Well, Mabel very slowly
walks
his fat ass to the steps, and then
I did like that.
That
was pretty funny, and it puts over Taker. You know, like no one wants to go near him.
So yeah, Taker gives King the tombstone. He's gone. Yankum comes in, which is weird seeing Yankum and Taker interact.
They're teaming up this Friday, if you haven't heard, against Shawn.
Oh my God. He gets cleared with a clothesline and a tombstone for the pin. That is amazing. These two fucking farts are fighting this Friday, 23 years after the fact.
And another guy, the Trent Hunter's in the match too.
Good Lord. Yeah, that's true. Three out of the eight competitors are main event in the show in the year 2018 that we're about to have. Hunter bolts to the outside, but Godwin has the slop bucket there to send him back in. Taker delivers a choke slam from the outside of the ring back inside and pins him. And then Mabel gets a tad bit of offense where he hits a belly-to-belly and that leg drop, but Taker sits up. Mabel gets freaked out. He bails for the count-out win. And Taker gets the clean sweep his team with his team as Mo gets choke slammed. Takes the punishment for Mabel running away. So, I mean, this match, again, I thought was okay. Probably slightly better than the last match. So I ended up going 2.25 on this one.
There were a lot of grudges and feuds woven in, mainly with Taker coming back. So we get that all mixed in there. The one thing I did like with Mabel is he had more of like a gold tint on his stuff instead of the purple, which I thought made him look a little bit more legit than we've talked about the purple before. I thought the gold actually made him just seem a little bit more, I don't know, whatever. I don't call it serious, but interesting mix on Taker's team. It's a good spot for these fringe guys, especially Fatu, who's kind of been flailing around since his kind of initial push, so it's not a bad spot. JR calls Hunter persnickety, which made me laugh. Big pop for Taker. He's got the mask, he said. We get the Big In Your House 4 rematch between Fatu and Hunter in there. And then King comes in when Godwin's in there, and he tags Yankum right away. I thought that was a funny spot. I thought King was pretty funny in this match, just kind of the chicken shit. JR says Henry Godwin's Bill Clinton's favorite wrestler. We've mentioned that. I think he said that before. Lawler's leopard print style tights. Brutal or what?
And, well, I mean, they're bad, but, I mean, King around this time was wearing just awful gear altogether.
Yeah.
Like, he loved that pink and, like, neon green where that was no longer in vogue, so he was still hanging on to it. So his tights throughout the 90s are pretty bad. So, I mean, this was certainly not great, but not in probably the bottom 10 of what I've seen him bust out in USWA.
His mullet is brutal here, too.
Yeah, that is bad.
Get a lengthy beatdown on Salvio leading to that pile driver you mentioned, which was actually a really nice pile driver. He hits two of them, and one he gets a two count. And then I guess it was, I don't know if it was meant to be a hard head or he just was like, almost just like instinct, just bounced up and dove for the tag. And then he just kind of collapses. It's like he was like a last gasp, you know what I mean? So instead of getting knocked out, he almost just like, the just kind of instinct takes over. I don't know, it was kind of weird. Either way, but I guess that's been done before, right? Like, pile driver getting no-sold, like Hawk and shit. Right?
Yeah, Hawk is kind of famous for doing that.
I like the King trying to tag. We mentioned that. And then they just all get murdered. Lawler gets murdered. Yankum gets waxed. Hunter tries to leave. He gets waxed. Mabel gets the belly-to-belly. Taker sits up. Mabel runs away. I thought this was a smart way to do it. Like, I liked having them all just stay undefeated. Taker looks like a monster. The heel team can all take losses. I'm glad they didn't do the trope that they've done sometimes where, like, all the faces, like, three of them go out and you leave the one guy. You know what I mean? Like, Taker didn't get, like,
yeah.
The other three didn't get eliminated, bang, 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 and then it's just Taker 4-1. I like that they did it this way. I thought it made a little bit more sense to have the all four to survive. So I liked the booking there. And those, like, the heels are all fucking good done. You know, it's like, I mean, Hunter, whatever. Hunter's on his way up, but he can take a loss to Taker here. Like, no one's getting hurt seriously by it. So I thought that was pretty well done overall. So I went 2.5. I thought the booking was pretty good. And it has some, like, fun spots, but it's really, you know, non-existent work rate. But the rest of it's fine.
There you have it. So Taker is back and on the attack.
And Mabel continues to fade.
True. We get some good final promos from Brent Diesel. Diesel especially says he's going to be using his power moves to win. Any thoughts on that? Just some final hype for our main event.
Yeah, I mean, nothing too much here, right? Yeah, Brett talks about the match. He talks about Bulldog. We get his interview, too. He talks about the Loon Challenge. And Bulldog says he's going to go and find if he's the best. And says the truck stops here, which is kind of cheesy. And then, yeah, Diesel just says he'll use his power. And he wants another shot at the Bulldog, too, and he wants to end the match quickly tonight.
Then we get a promo with DiBiase, Sid, Bulldog, and Cornette. Now, this is interesting where they were trying to instigate something with Cornette where Cornette's like, what? You didn't see me earlier. I've been, you know, here the whole time. And he was been hanging out at Davey's side and all this stuff. So he says that. And then yeah. Shawn Michaels and Ahmed come in. And I tried to write down what Shawn said, but
I couldn't even track it. Yeah, it's
just... I still don't know if I understand it. Because he basically says, like, you like all the wrestling chicks, right? Like they do the Heartbreak Kid, or you like the dudes and fight Ahmed because he's my back door. I don't know what – it was nonsensical what Sean was trying to say. But, I mean, I guess that's our final hype for the wild card match.
I did like Todd prodding with the – Cornette was in the locker room earlier.
Yes, that was a good moment.
DiBiase's really like, oh, he's so played out. He's like, you better win and take home the cash. Like, all right, Ted, yeah, we know you want the money. We get it. We get it. So, Ted, yep.
So now we get our wild card match, and this was, I think, my most egregious perfect line of the night, where Ahmed comes out
he is so perfect. Perfect so set.
He's as big as a house. And has the garage to go with it. Oh, that's just his nose, which is just...
He's incredibly racist. Like, he's real bad coming up. There's some rough stuff with him. Between him, Lawler, and Jeff Jarrett, who shows back up. Like, they're real bad, the three of them. Like, we'll see it. It's coming.
This is so bad. Like, can you imagine, like, the Twitter outcry?
Oh, yeah.
Would say all of something this. Like right, that yeah. now. But, yeah, I mean, it was just awful. So this, I mean, this match, I think is kind of has a good bit of lore for WWF lexicon, I guess. So I was interested to see if it held up, and let's get into it. Owen and HBK started off. HBK opens up quickly. He does his usual thing where he kind of whacks Cornette on the outside, yeah. gets the best of him. We talked to that before where he does sort of that goofy beginning,
right.
To start out. Making fun of Cornette. Owen, I thought, gets a good power slam. He tags in Dean Douglas. HBK and Dean go at it for a little bit, and then HBK gets a nice moonsault on Dean. Ahmed gets his first tag into the match. He takes out both Dean and Owen, and Ahmed is in the corner, and Razor actually punches Ahmed a bit, kind of getting over the gimmick that, you know, it's a wild card match. So Razor and Dean then start bickering with each other, of course, though, and Razor ends up hitting Dean, allowing HBK to roll him up. Dean is done here. And then we get two cool sequences where first is Davey versus Owen facing off against each other. Thought Owen hit a really good, nice spinning back kick. And then they smarten up, tag in both Razor and Sean, so they face off each other. Crowd's pumped to see them go after each other. And they had a good sequence with each other. Then Razor gets worked over a bit, and him and Sid have an extended run against each other, which is not as good as the previous two sequences. Sid does hit a good choke slam and tags in Sean for the sweet chin music. And Sid holds Razor up, but Razor ducks, and Sid ends up getting whacked with the sweet chin music and pinned. HBK kind of says, oh, well.
Yeah, that was funny. Now, this
was funny, where Bulldog awkwardly, like, runs in to break up that pin attempt.
Yeah.
And he was not supposed to. So he, like, hits the leg. You could tell Razor didn't know what to do, whether to sell it or not. So he just sort of looks annoyed at Bulldog and then hits him again. Yeah,
kind of shrugs and lays on him again.
Right, right. Sid is pissed off that he's been eliminated. He powerbombs Sean before he leaves. Sean kind of gets taken out and worked as a face in peril for the length of the match here. He makes the hot tag to Ahmed, who's able to hit the Pearl River Plunge to eliminate Owen. And then Razor smacks everyone, but gets a spine buster from Ahmed. So they were going after each other. But Ahmed kind of does this weird celebration in the corner. And he's right in Razor's edge position. And Razor does hit that on him. So that was kind of odd. But, you know, I guess you could chalk it up to him being inexperienced. Bulldog does interfere for that pin, though. And he hammers away on Razor. And then here comes 1-2-3 Kid, Sid, and DiBiase back to ringside. Razor's distracted by them. He does deck 1-2-3 Kid, but he goes right into the power slam by the Bulldog, and he's pinned. So that's a nice victory for the Bulldog heading into his championship match coming up. So now it's just Yoko versus the three on the other team. Yoko misses the bonsai drop on Sean, and Ahmed slams them again. And then we get a sweet chin music and a splash from Ahmed. So that team's wins with Ahmed, Sean, and Bulldog being your sole survivors. A funny moment where Ahmed and Sean are raising yes. each other's hand to cheers. And Cornette is just completely celebrating with Bulldog raising his hand to booze while Yoko is just sort of wallowing on the mat. So poor Yoko. You know, I like this match. I thought it was fun. Thought it was actively good, but again, like I said, like I feel like this is a real memorable match, and I guess it's the concept. It's just something you didn't see much,
right?
And was something they really didn't go back to either. So this is kind of like your only wild card Survivor Series type match that you can think of right offhand. So while I did think this was good, I went 3.25 stars. I do think this is kind of a little bit. I guess overrated or kind of surprisingly remembered. I mean, it makes sense, but it's just like, I mean, man, think about like even all the matches we'd had on pay-per-view up to this point. Like, so, I mean, just something that popped in my head, like the Rockers versus Haku and Barbarian from WrestleMania 7 as an opener. I think that's a much better match than this, but obviously not as well remembered. So,
well, I think part of it too, I think part of it too is like, the show is looked at as such a breath of fresh air, kind of the start of the rebirth, you know, like, so I think this gets kind of lumped in with the nostalgia of the show, like overall, like it just feels like it's such a fresh show for what 95 was that you just kind of lump it all in as like, oh, it was all real good, you know? So I think that's part of it too. But I think it was shrewd. Yeah. I think it was shrewd to get all the high level talent in one match, even though it's unbalanced. Like instead of trying to force someone else into this spot, they just said, fuck it. We got 5 heels, 3 faces. We're going to make it work. You know what I mean? they just put them all in there. Like, yeah, they could have probably taken Dean out, stuck like Jannetty in there and done 4-on-4. But I like that. They just said, here are all the guys that have been our upper mid card guys for the last 3 months, and they're all in this match. So I like the way they did that. You know, they kind of just said, fuck it. We're going to mix it up. Because they say wild card, but it's really just, you know, 3 heels and a face versus, what, 2 heels and 2 faces? I mean, it's not like that. It's not like super shaken up or anything. It's, right, it's kind of there. But I like the way they went about it and the way they set it up. Bulldog was still presented real well as a top player, and they're really pushing that In Your House 5 title match, which I like too. Like, they're not overlooking it. They've mentioned it, and now they keep hyping it. So they've been building to the next pay-per-view all night by hyping that match. So they're keeping Bulldog hot. Ahmed really soaks it, and he looks like a beast when he comes out. And Perfect is super bitter about Sean, calls him stupid. Like, you can tell there's still lingering issues between the two of them for whatever reason. Whether it's kayfabe or not, it's like Vince and it's like Jesse and Hogan. Like, he just, like, hates him. Like, he just, like, as soon as Sean comes out, he fucking hates him. Shitting all over him. So we get the discussions by both teams when they start. Perfect's wondering how Gorilla makes the teams, and Vince puts over how wild he's been as president. He's running wild throughout the office, Gorilla Monsoon. We get the fucking with Cornette, like you said. I like the snap belly to belly by Owen. Dean finally gets that shot at Michaels, and they have the pretty fun back and forth. Michaels thinks Perfect is faking being hurt and didn't want to get pinned, and Vince just cuts it off really fast. He's like, oh, we're saving that one, buddy. But I thought that was funny. It's like he's just calling out all his bullshit right away. Ahmed gets a huge pop for the first tag. And I like the teamwork with Sean and Ahmed. You can tell that they may kind of set them up to be almost like a modern Mega Powers in a way. Like, and we'll see that if that plays out in 96. But you can tell they're kind of lining up Ahmed as the top guy next to Sean as we move along. Douglas is completely marginalized. He gets a lot of ring time early, but this Razor just punches him and Sean rolls him up. Like, there's not much going on. We get some decent offense from Sean and Razor, which keeps the crowd into it. Ramon gets the edge, like you said. Ahmed makes a save. Perfect says this is why Sean's always buddying up with the big guy so they can save him. He's just all over Sean. We get the super kick. I love the shrug. That's funny. And then Sid goes out. The weird, awkward stretch with Bulldog interfering. The power bomb from Sid. Ahmed gets the tiger bomb with Owen for the pin. I thought that looked good. I thought Ramon versus Ahmed was a cool match. Even though Ahmed fucked up and goes too far for the second row bulldog, and that kind of pisses off Razor. And then we get the stupid spot where Ahmed stands on the bottom rope with his arms out. And like you said, it sets him up for the edge. We look real dumb. It reminds me of the Please No, where Farouk stands on the guy's head. Like, I mean, that's just what it looked like to me. I hate that. Bulldog makes a save, and then Sid Kid DiBiase came out, like you said. They push that some more, and then that all goes into the finish. I love the celebration as well. I thought Ahmed was the biggest star here. He looked like he really belonged with the upper guys. I thought Bulldog continues to look good, and Dean is just really sliding down the drain. I mean, he's just nothing. So I went 3.25 on this, too. I think it's good. It's sloppy. It's choppy at times and awkward, but I think it was just them trying to figure out how to work with each other in this different role. So I don't completely blame them, but it's really a Sean and Ahmed showcase. But they weave a lot in, like – even Dean got some shine. So, like, nobody looked crappy in this thing. Like, they all look pretty good. It's just kind of, they didn't fully click to get to that next gear. I think if you gave them, like, another shot at it, they'd probably go better, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, it's just kind of interesting that, yeah. I mean, I do feel like this is well-remembered, and I don't know. It was good, but probably not as good as the memories are for right. A lot of it, so.
Yeah, no, I mean... Right. For 95 pay-per-view, it's solid. You know what I mean? Like, it's, we haven't got a ton of these on the undercard in 95. Yeah. So, you know, it's fine. It's good. There's a lot of progression in there, you know, so that's good. Like, there's some story stuff mixed in and whatnot.
What was I going to say about the, I was going to mention something, but, never mind. Slipped my mind. Now, did we go straight to Clinton?
Or? Yeah. Todd's with Clinton. Yep.
Yeah. So, and he's with Sonny. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of an infamous breakout scene for her. Oh, I did look up. Meltzer gave that match 3.5.
The so women or the higher, wild card?
The wild card okay. match. So, there we have it. But, yeah, so he's with Sonny. A lot of jokes here where Clinton says there's nothing – better than eating some popcorn and watching a perfect match as he stared down Sonny's dress. says he could have her in a cabinet position. Tells her to come to the White House so they can go over all the different positions she can work on. And she jabs back at him. So there we have it, which was, you know, kind of some good forethought by WWF here with Clinton being a womanizer.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Really come out yet. Yeah, that was good. And it's really the first time we see Sonny as, like, a sex symbol. Like, we haven't really seen that yet. She's just kind of been skip second and kind of the workout bitch. Like, we haven't really seen her presented
as
kind of sexual like this. So it's interesting to see her presented this way. And she looked good. She had the yellow dress on. Definitely a moment you'd love to have back at the time. Sonny feeding you popcorn, sitting on your lap. But, no, it was good. I thought for all the guff you gave them about Clinton in the build-up, I thought the skits had been all pretty good. You get the gunfire, you get the backlinks. Oh, come on. They've been funny enough. They're kept quick, and it could have been worse.
I mean, they've tried to weave it through the whole show. I still think this was the only one that was successful. I mean, the bomb thing was cheesy. The backlink thing was nothing. I mean,
yeah, but it was funny. I thought backlink was funny, just snubbing him. Just completely fucking ignored him.
Didn't find it amusing.
Let me take your politics too seriously, I guess.
I think overall this was kind of a waste. I mean, the only good thing that came out of it was Sonny was presented more as a sex symbol, so there's that.
Yeah, then, I mean, combined with 4 minutes, I mean, I don't think it was that much of a waste. Yeah, it's not like it was a 20-minute skit in the middle of the ring. I mean, you know.
I know, but this is like they're trying to make this like their comedic moment of the...
Yeah.
It's not like it ruins the pay-per-view, but I don't find it amusing, so... I don't like it.
Tough. tough sense of humor. All right, main event time. You ready?
I like good comedy. That was not this. Brett versus Diesel. This is a big match. Been hyped to a lot. So what they did before the match, I liked even better. They could have expanded on that, where you had Vince talking to Perfect and Ross, and this is actually the best part of Perfect the whole night, where he basically says, like, oh, well, I'm just going to have to pick the wrestler. And then Ross gets to tell the tape with Diesel, says, you know, he's 7 feet tall, he's 320 pounds, he's going to try to go for the knockout blow early, and he's picking Diesel. So this is our big main event. I was interested to see how this match held up. Diesel starts off by removing the turnbuckle pad on one side. Brett does the same. Diesel takes the fight right to Brett, right at the bell. Hart's having to kind of roll to the outside and sort of tries a rope-a-dope strategy, where Diesel's having to sort of stalk him to continue kicking his ass, but Diesel does that. I thought Diesel looked methodical but very menacing and impressive, taking out Brett in the early going of this match. Brett's selling that really well, too, where he's sort of sucking wind. He has an open mouth, kind of. He's all disheveled. He looks really out of it, and I just thought the sell job was excellent, kind of showing off the power of Diesel. Back inside, Diesel does look for the KO blow with the jackknife powerbomb early in the match. Brett's able to block it. He grabs the arm and kind of hammers away and uses some cheap tactics. I mean, he's biting Diesel. Mm-hmm. He's raking at him with the eyes, so really using some cheap tactics to get any advantage over Diesel. Then the match shifts where Brett goes after the leg, and he really dissects the leg, does a great job working it over for a few minutes. Figure four, kind of cranking on it, elbows on the leg, everything, you name it. He goes for the sharpshooter, but that's reversed with the back of Brett's head hitting that exposed turnbuckle pad, which is a good callback from the beginning of the match. Diesel's back up and clobbering, but Brett is able to grab the leg. On the ring corner, he posts him with the leg, and then he gets tied up with the camera cord as Brett goes for a chair. So what I really liked about this match, and I think it is even better in retrospect, is the weapons that were used in this match, with it being no DQ, were all organically kind of arrived.
Right.
You didn't have the kendo stick, the trash can, all these other random paraphernalia, even the tables. I mean, like, you know, like the match that happened – last night with Becky Lynch and Charlotte was a great match, but I kind of just – I've been a little bit desensitized to that where I mean, it's definitely kind of plunder first to a degree, whereas I thought this one was hate first and the weapons were just sort of organically a means to an end. So I really love the camera cord getting tied up on Diesel's leg where, you know, Brett grabs that chair. Diesel's able to sort of barely kick him away like a dog, you know, kind of fighting him off with his one good leg. Then Brett's able to recover and hammer the chair on the back and knee of Diesel to damage him even more. Brett climbs to the top, but Diesel catches him, crotches him, and then unties himself. Diesel, I thought, was really great at selling the leg as he hits his weight-assisted butt splash when Brett's dangling on the ropes. But, I mean, he's really lingering around, like can barely stand on the leg, goes for the snake eyes and can barely lift Brett up, and he is very slow to follow up after that. He tries again, but Brett reverses and smacks Diesel into the exposed turnbuckle this time, and then Brett hits a good bulldog for a two count. And then we get the kind of finishing stretch where Diesel rolls to the outside, Brett hits a nasty plancha, which he wipes out on right onto the floor, gets back to the ring apron. We get the table spot, which is a very memorable spot now. Still looks great where Brett just goes flying into the table, kind of in a shocking manner. The crowd reaction's great for it. And now it looks like Diesel has the match in control. He just needs to hit his jackknife powerbomb. That's what he tries to do to finish it. But Brett is the ultimate wrestler, still has that one resourceful move in his back pocket, which is a inside cradle, and ends up beating Diesel as he yells, motherfucker, right as he loses. And then after the match, Diesel goes nuts, hits the jackknife powerbomb on Brett, officially turns heel as he punches away the referees and everything else. So, you know, I'd really liked this match before. I thought it was great and all that. I thought it was exceptional here. Really enjoyed it. Think it's I was thinking about it in the kind of upper echelon of the other great classic matches I'd rank from the 90s in WWF, and I think it's the top 10 match of the 1990s for WWF, and I ended up going 4 3/4 for this one. I mean, like, so we watched the, you know, we just finished watching the SummerSlams, and I enjoyed some of the more classic Bret matches, like Bret versus Perfect, Bret versus Bulldog from SummerSlam. But I thought this was a tick up for me. I enjoyed this one even more. And I think this kind of, along with the Owen Hart WrestleMania 10 match, was Bret's best matches in the WWF to date. And I do think this is Diesel, Kevin Nash's, whatever, best match, period, in his career. Yeah. I mean, I like the Better Friends, Stiffer Enemies match a good bit, but I thought this was, again, a tick above that.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd was real hot for Bret. And it's been a weird year-long odyssey leading to this point. Like, he's looking for his belt back. It's, if you take it as a year-long story from when he lost to Backlund to here, it's been a lot of ups and downs. You get the mind games early with the turnbuckle pads. Good aggressive shots from Diesel, like he had promised. JR says, like has been the story coming in, you know, he wants to end it early. Like, right? JR said that a bunch of times. So we're seeing that play out here right away. Diesel pummels the back in and out of the ring, uses the chair first. I thought the commentary was real focused in telling the story here that you talked about. I thought they were on point again. It was a good night for the commentary. Perfect kind of breathing some fresh air into the booth, and I thought JR was excellent. I thought Vince was good, like, kind of stewarding the ship. I thought the three of them worked real well together.
I mean, they were good in this match. Perfect, I think. I mean, he made a lot of comments throughout the other matches. I think he was a little inconsistent. I did think the call on,
but it was just
match,
fresh hearing him, like you know, from King and Hendrick. Like, it just was like, yeah, a newer voice for 95, like, after this year. It felt like a bigger deal to have him out there,
I suppose. But, you know, he's just going to be passing his own vendetta and being racist. I don't know if I necessarily need to hear his fresh takes. But they were good for this match. I mean, because I think they both, I mean, for somebody that, I don't know how much respect he had in the locker room at this point in time, they did good still getting over Diesel.
Right.
Like, that he possibly could win this match.
Oh,
like,
for they, sure. I don't think it was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, they did a good job of that. Like, this felt like a toss-up type match. So,
right.
They did good with that.
He's won so consistently, and you could see them maybe doing him in Bulldog again. You know what I mean? Like, the only thing that made it probable was that the Mania match had already kind of started to come out. You know what I mean? It was probably going to be Bret and Shawn at Mania. Like, that was already starting
right
to get, word was starting to come out. So, but, I don't know, would you have been shocked if they did Diesel Shawn too? Like, that wouldn't have been that out of the realm if Shawn beats him.
No.
You know, so, yeah, no, I do think they didn't do a bad job of at least adding some mystery around this. So Diesel goes to the quick jackknife, Bret blocks it, Bret goes to the leg and picks it apart. I really liked all that stuff. JR calls back to the Rumble throughout all the match. I like that. Bret gets creative, he ties Diesel's leg to the post. That was neat. Bret was real vicious here, and the commentary goes right with that, saying how badly he wants that belt back. Diesel unties the cord, and we just get real hard offense back and forth here at a deliberate but not a slow pace. Like, they're measuring, but they're not sluggish. Like, I liked that part of it as well. The comeback is really good. The iconic spot with the table, and Bret just dead weight into the finish. Diesel, I like it because he kept talking about, I'm going to have this killer instinct, I'm going to end it quick. You know, I'm underrated, I'm overlooked. You got, you know, everyone's picking Bret, and then he just lapses for that 1 second as he thinks about what to do, and that's all Bret needed was that 1 second. I love that finish, and Diesel just pays for it. After this long run, he finally just kind of give that one blip, and he paid. We get the nasty jackknife where he just throws Bret to the mat and then destroys the refs. Good match. Stiff, hard brawling. It was to the point, focused. This is the Diesel that we all wanted, right? I mean, this is the Diesel that would have probably dominated most of 95, but I don't know if he had the opponents to do it. I don't know what they could have done differently, but when you see this Diesel, it's like, fuck, this is the guy. Like, this is what they were looking for. And Bret was aggressive as well. He's been aggressive through most of 95, but he really turns it up here. I went 4.5. I love this match. It's great. Again, it's a it almost makes you sad after what we had to sit through for most of 95 that Diesel could do this, you know? It's like, fuck, where the hell's this been?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's kind of sad. He gets going on a pretty nice run here, but yeah, I mean, he's been here since he won the belt. Hasn't been in a feud since even, like, I'd say the Shawn Mania stuff wasn't as engaging as this, so.
No, I mean, you could maybe say, but, if you, like, when Scott and I rewatched the Raws in late 94, early 95, his initial kind of follow-up with Backlund and then leading into Bret at the Rumble was pretty good, and this is probably... Like, this is better, and that's probably the closest that he got was Bret that time, too, leading up to the Rumble, which is probably... I mean, I guess, do you like that match better than Mania? Which one would you have higher?
I don't know. Yeah, probably the Rumble, right?
I think so. I'd
probably go that.
Yeah. I'd have to look back for me and Scott had, but I think it's...
Yeah, I haven't watched the Rumble. I actually did want to watch the Rumble. I only watched this match today, and I'd like to watch the Rumble match again. To see, because I know when I watched King of the Ring 94, I thought that was, like, very good, but, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like a good template, but wasn't quite there as, like, a great match, you know, like a good starter match, but right. not quite there. But I know, like Charles from PWO, I think he almost prefers the Rumble match, which is weird, you know, I mean, it's a... Yeah, to Survivor Series, which is kind of contrarian, but I know he really does enjoy the Rumble match a lot. So
I
probably need to rewatch that one.
I went 4.5 on this, 3.5 for Diesel Shawn, and I went 4 for the Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, I know when I watched Diesel Shawn for my WrestleMania rewatch thing during WrestleMania season, I thought it was like 3.25, 3.5 around there. I didn't think it was a great match. I know that for sure. So
yeah, so Diesel's two best matches of this year were definitely with Bret. Scott only went 2.5 on that Rumble match. He's out of his mind. And then King of the Ring, I went 3.5 on that Diesel Bret. So
yeah, so I'm pretty close around there on the King of the Ring. So yeah, I mean, a really good feud. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was three very strong matches together, and it really told kind of a complete story.
And we get one more, of course, in a couple of months.
Yeah, that is true. I always forget about that. I kind of want to forget about that. I mean, that's probably going to be good, but...
Right. No, it's tough to live up to the hype of the two they had.
Right.
And the build is kind of forgotten for this match. I think everyone remembers the match and just assumes they kind of got thrown together, but like they did the real sports build to it, and I thought it was really well done. The face-to-face we saw last week... And they really, it all tied together with Bret wanting his belt. He's aggressive. Diesel is going to be aggressive, wants to end the match fast. You know, so like everything they told played out.
Yeah, very good match. So like for me, the other stuff from the 90s for WWF I'd put with this would be like, Savage Warrior and then Bret Owen and then the ladder match from SummerSlam. For me, and this match, and then probably something like Mind Games and Hell in the Cell 1, Canadian Stampede, both Austin versus Bret, mm-hmm. both Survivor Series and WrestleMania 13, and then probably something like Over the Edge 98. So right. That was kind of the matches I was bouncing back and forth as being on the level with this or above it. So
yeah,
it's in good company for me. I mean, like I said, I don't know. I mean, like, I know some people rank, like, Bret versus Bulldog from SummerSlam at 5 and even Bret versus Perfect, but I never got the vibe for that. But
so is this Bret's best non-Austin match?
I think, I do have it behind the Owen WrestleMania 10 right, match. But besides that, I think it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm really intrigued to watch the Bulldog match.
Oh yeah, I love that match. I can't wait for that.
Because I do know I like it better just when I've watched it before, better than SummerSlam. Yep. And I did go 4.25 on SummerSlam. So
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, we'll see what it gets. But yeah, he's on a pretty good run right now. And I'm actually a defender of the Iron Man match. But yeah, this is in a different league from that. So
no, for sure. I want to look real quick at what I had that In Your House 5 match last time I watched it, but I'm really hyped for that one. That's one of my favorite matches, and I am on team In Your House 5 over SummerSlam 92 for sure for that that feud. When I watched it last, I went 4.
Mm.
So we'll see.
We will see. Yeah. All right. So are we ready to get to our awards?
Do you want to do awards or feedback first?
Let's do feedback. Yeah, we got a lot of good feedback. So
yeah,
let's go
so thank
that.
You. Thank you all. Andy Helene, big markout moment when Mr. Perfect showed up. He loves a wild card match. Bill Clinton impersonator was decent. Opening match still rocks his socks. Brett Diesel is overshadowed by the white-haired grandma getting into the match. Only bad thing about this show is Bam Bam's half-assing. You want me to read all these or are you going to jump in?
Yeah, you can go for it. Sorry, I'm not on the page.
No, you're good. Chris Hatley, one of my favorite pay-per-views ever. One of the best main events in Survivor Series history. Bret Hart looked like the biggest babyface, defeating Diesel in a fluky type finish. Diesel kicked off a good run, albeit short. Diesel looks like a badass. Who could forget Bret's table bump? The rest of the show is pretty hit or miss, but I did like the women's match and the opener. All in all, maybe not the greatest top to bottom, but definitely memorable. I find myself rewatching it a couple times a year. Andy, he says, Diesel from that Survivor Series Senior House is his best run ever. Jay Hinchy, definitely one of my favorite Survivor. I've seen this one. Definitely one of my favorite Survivor Series. Brett and Diesel in a really good main event. The finish is one of my favorite Hitman victories, suckering in Big Daddy Cool. Opener in wild card Survivor Series matches, I don't think get enough praise. Undertaker leads his team to the clean sweep. The first time Hunter Helmsley refers to as Triple H by Mr. Perfect. Sad swan song for Bam Bam Bigelow. It's a shame he's not in the Hall of Fame. Also, pretty much the end of the women's division at the time. Jason Sherman says, Perfect's commentary is absolutely amazing. One of my favorite lines of all time when Jannetty hits the rocker dropper and he says, that man will break your, or man, that'll really break your neck. Will Olson says, something about color commentators pointing out the obvious always works. Steve McCullough, I love this show. It's one I've watched dozens of times. I would have been 15 when the show happened. I can still remember when Perfect returned. It's a wonderful moment. The less said about his commentary, the better. Great, energetic, high-flying opener. Hakushi was super over. Probably the first time I'd ever seen a top rope powerbomb. Women's match was pretty mind-blowing for 95, years ahead of its time. It's a pity Perfect dragged it down with his outdated sexist commentary. But funny thing, 7 days later, WCW would do this with their own Joshi match on pay-per-view. You should make a point to compare the commentary. We'll do just that. Bigelow versus Goldust was long and boring and sucked. Goldust is a total dud. Darkside versus Royal is a great example of patience paying off. Sitting those first 15 minutes is worth it for Taker's hot tag massacre. I love this match more than I should. The wild card is weird. I adore it, but it makes no sense. It's never explained why it's happening. Apparently, this is Bill Watts' idea. Per Between the Sheets, WWF announced it, realized they didn't know what it was or couldn't remember Watts' reasoning, so they just had it anyway as is. It's still a great match, and which makes sense. It really kicks off Shawn's road to WrestleMania. I love the two interviews with the opposing teams and Cornette playing both sides and Bulldog. What a bastard. that's a good point, the Watts thing, because they really don't hype much of it, like week to week in the build. Like, there's like nothing. They just kind of say what it is.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
As for the main event, this is the best Kevin Nash match ever. Pre-match video is excellent. Really gives it the legit sports importance and a big fight feel. A great, great match. A little slow for some modern day fans, but it's a masterpiece of build and everything in it means something. If anyone ever asks why is Bret Hart great, this is the match I show them. Throw in the table spot, a great finish, which gets me out of my seat all these years later, and even better post-match. You have a classic confrontation. All this is an excellent show. In my opinion, the best of 95 from either company. Highest recommendation. My favorite part of the show is the lovely old lady sitting front row beside Faith No More guy. She's passionately into everything. God, I didn't even notice her, did you?
Yeah, I didn't make a note of her, certainly, but that's two times this came up. So she
Diesel's
going
best,
nuts.
Matt Souza, Diesel's best match? Yes, Diesel's best match. Chris Hatley thinks between this and Good Friends, Better Enemies. Buddy Peter Fusco checking in. I have a soft spot for the Royals. I love whoever saw that Dreyf had enough aristocracy gimmicks to form an entire team. Yankum fitting in by proxy due to his association with Lawler. Of course, he was the Royal Dentist. Odd as it sounds, the scene with Clinton flirting with Sonny was probably the first marker of a not adult but more adult direction Dreyf was headed in. That shit wouldn't have flown even 6 months earlier. By December, we get the Goldust gimmick being ramped up. Weapon shots, blood. It arguably starts here. Peter Winston, it's funny how the best version of Diesel starts the second he loses the title. God knows an anti-hero would never work as champion. And Will Olson wraps it up with the tweener Diesel was basically Nash being Nash dressed as Diesel. He was fun. So lots of good stuff there. I don't know if you want to touch on this too. So on our last episode, Steve McCullough checked in again with the Between the Sheets tidbit, talking about the Razor Sid match. This is the week of click problems hitting the fan, the week of Vince having to fly to house shows for the summit to prevent the strike. As far as Razor Sid goes, the match was taped in October as non-title. At some point, it was decided between the match and re-edited to be presented as for the title, with Sid therefore getting the IC title. He was told this is the case and he was getting the belt. In conjunction with the click problems mentioned previously and the general mess of politics that week, they reversed back to the original scenario very late in the week, maybe as late as Sunday, as the commentary superstar still referred to the match on Monday being for the belt, and this is going to be non-title with Razor retaining. Sid went home and he found out he wasn't getting the title. So, a little additional info there from Steve.
Sounds like quite a mess.
Yeah, this whole time period is a mess. And again, I...
Oh.
Yeah.
So I also looked up Big Dave's rating on Brett versus Diesel. Mm-hmm. 3.5.
Oof.
So, I may go see if I can find the actual sheet and make sure that's not a typo on the sheet I'm looking at, because that seems pretty stingy, but yeah.
Yeah, it does.
All right, are we ready now to go into our awards?
Yeah, I think so. And thank you, everyone, for the feedback.
Oh, yeah. Feedback was really good. I mean, like I said, I think this show really has a lot of nostalgia for a lot of people. It's kind of one of those memorable shows. It's kind of the right place, right time, probably, for the show, where we'd had just a slog of stuff going on with the product. So it was nice to see WWF have a good show that they churned out here.
No, I agree. And I've said it a million times, but the Titan Sinking book and series, like all the stuff that Steve talked about in Between the Sheets, like all that's covered in those books, and it's really excellent. Look at this tumultuous year, especially late in the year.
All right. Match of the night is very easy. It's Bret Hart versus Diesel. Mm-hmm. Your moment.
I went with Diesel snapping at the end of the night.
Okay, I agree with that. I think it's either between that or Sonny and Clint of all things. So
yeah. Diesel snapping is such a big moment. It's like it just, arguably, like the Sonny thing's fun, but and you could point to it as the start of Attitude, but Diesel. I mean, this really kicks off what would become the NWO. I think you could say that. Like if he doesn't turn here, snap here, and kick off this run of like arrogant, smarmy Diesel that becomes Kevin Nash, that becomes the Outsiders, that becomes like I think you trace it all back to here. Like there's two lines. You got Bischoff discovering the invasion angle in Japan, and Diesel kickstarting this run here, and they kind of intersect in April. Like that's my thought on it anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, even the table spot, like right. That almost kickstarts the Attitude too, because I mean, certainly, like, they'd had their share of that in ECW and on the independents, but for it to kind of be mainstream, like, we'd seen it with Sabu, sort of, on Nitro, mm-hmm. too, but it's just something about the way it was presented here where it felt shocking and organic and really kind of changed the game to a degree, I mean, as we'll see. So that's both our moments of the night. Your MVP for the show?
Brett for me.
Brett for me too. I mean, I think it's really only him or Diesel, and Brett was great.
All right, I got a bunch of commentary lines.
Okay.
I can't believe the people are behind Horowitz. That was perfect, which made me laugh. That'll break your neck. We talked about that one. Here comes the big one, Vince about Aja. Not the most handsome woman you'll ever see, Vince on Aja. He gives you the willies, Vince on Goldust. Talk about the Three Stooges. Look at these guys. Perfect. Talking about the dark side. The Chevy Vega is durable. Perfect. when the boy becomes a man, he'll be ready for me. Perfect. Oh, he's all man. Vince gives back. That's about Sean. He wasn't even hurt when he gave up the belt. He just didn't want to get pinned. That was perfect as well. So, a lot going on.
Yeah.
No shots fired.
No. Debuts, we had a lot of women.
Yeah, kind of women, pretty much. Dropped angles, I guess. Would you count Kong here? Or I guess we could wait, however you want to do it. But, I mean, I don't know if we even see Blade. I'd have to look. I'm not sure who we see again from them. I don't recall off the top of my head. But
yeah, because Kong faces whom at Raw? Sorry.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see her again. But
yeah, so yeah, I guess we'll call that a dropped angle here, because Kong certainly seemed positioned to face Blaze for the title.
Yeah, she happened. Definitely was at the Rumble. Yeah, we just never got
there. So we do have a buy rate, and the buy rate was 0.57. Not great, not terrible.
Right.
But not very good, really. I mean, SummerSlam was 0.9.
I mean, you can't blame people. I mean, tough time of year, and this coming off
in
your 4. Yeah, I mean, just coming off that run, Kingdom of the Ring is an interesting one to study because it's obviously an all-time bad show. But going in, like when you go to tournament, that Shawn and it Taker and like it's not bad. It's not awful on paper. You know what I mean? Like it just ends up being pretty shitty because of the booking. I could see why people ordered it though.
Right. All right. So what did you give this as a total score?
I went 7.5 out of 10, which is the highest score I've given since we started this project. It's the 1060 in Nitro. I went 7 out of 10, and that's the closest to this.
Yeah. Let me see if I've given something else. I did give that 1016 a 7 out of 10. I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10, too. I do think this is a good pay-per-view. I don't know. I'm a little conflicted. I'm probably maybe slightly lower overall on the pay-per-view itself because, like, I do think a lot of people try to put the wild card matches at, oh, this is that number two mm-hmm. match, you know? And while I did think that was really good and came off two pretty bad matches between Goldust and Bam Bam and the Royals versus the Dead Man Inc. group, I still thought like it topped out as good, but I mean, yeah, I mean, one absolutely stupendous match and three good matches, and some interesting nuggets in the other two matches that make them totally not throwaways, gives us a 7 out of 10. It's an easy watch too. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes. So it's
yeah,
easy
it goes
to
by
watch.
Fast. No, it's a fun show and it's an important show. It is. I mean, there's a lot going on and it really is like, we've talked about it a bunch, kind of like them hitting the valley, but, and we're starting to turn and, you know, I'm not saying we're back, we're going to have shaky weeks, but this really is like kind of we're starting to get better now.
Yeah. So there we go. We'll see if they can carry that momentum into Raw tomorrow night.
We will. And we'll cover that in our next episode. We'll also cover the Nitro, which will be the go home for World War III, the first ever World War III, 95. So that'll be interesting. We sure we'll get some more Dark Hogan that we can talk about. So lots going on in the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. Just check it all out each and every day. We had the reaction show earlier today with Chris and Devin looking at Evolution 18. We had a new survey says, of course, Steel and Argument looking at Halloween Havoc 95. We talked about Where the Big Boys Play, those rolling out. New Place to Be podcast, me, Scott, and D'Amato talking MSG 1088. So a lot going on. You can check all that out on the PlayStation Wrestling feed, subscribe on iTunes. We have a new PTB coming up this week. It's our Halloween episode that'll drop on Wednesday. New main event this week as well, I think. So lots going on. And of course, over on the PTB and Pup feed, tons of content going on there too. We have a lot of NBA stuff dropping, I heard, preview of the season early on. This week in the NFL, that hits every week. Hard Traveling Fanboys, all the Marvel shows. Freak Out Drive-In, that's a monthly show, and of course they have Jenny has a special one coming this week as well for Halloween, so check that out. Glenn Butler podcast, our Spectacular came back as well, so lots going on in the Pop feed too.
Yep, and let's talk about the greatest tag team in WWF history. The ballot is open, right?
Yeah, it is. It opened tonight, so ballot voting is open until the end of the year. We'll see how things go if we need to buy some time, but as of now, we're planning on closing it out on December 31st. So if you go, if you're not on the Facebook page, you can reach out and ask, and we can give you the link. You can submit your ballot for the top 100 greatest WWE tag teams ever, and you get those in. So that officially opened today. Aaron and I, of course, are building our list on air, so you can catch that where we're up to so far on No Holds Barred, which is not very far, but we're getting there. So it's kind of working through the initial cut. So anyway, check that out. Lots going on. Anything else? We got everything?
I think that's it.
All right. PlayStation.com. Check it out. Talk to you later. Smell the napalm.
To give, I will survive. I will survive. Yeah, yeah. We'll be right back. took all the strength I had just not to fall apart. I'm trying hard to mend the pieces of my broken heart. And I spent oh so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry, but now I hold my head up high and you see me with somebody new. I'm not that stupid little person still in love with you. And so you thought you'd just drop by and you expect me to be free. But now I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me. Oh, now go walk out the door, just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, now I will survive. Yeah, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive.